These days, we are hearing a great deal about the widening divide between the haves and the have-nots. In Terre Haute, Indiana, though, it seems a little easier to see how the other 1% lives, or at least lived. WFIU's Yael Cassander took the Farrington's Grove Holiday Home Tour to discover why residents are passionate about preserving what was once the refuge of the elite.
When Terre Haute, Indiana was the crossroads of America, Farrington's Grove was its best address.
Sixth Street was considered the wealthy section of town.
Kaylin Sanders has served as the president of the Farrington's Grove Historic District.
Tony Holman lived in a house on South 6th Street.
The dynasty forever associated with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, architect Dan Sanders explained, owned several homes in Farrington's Grove.
There's actually several houses that were Holman houses. Chapman Root lived in the neighborhood. Matter of fact, he lived about a half a block away from Tony Holman's house. Chapman Root was the glass manufacturer and designer of the Coca-Cola bottle.
It's hard to believe that such fixtures of American enterprise as the Indy 500 and a bottle of Coke can be traced back to a single grouping of about 1,100 houses built at the turn of the last century on what had been James Farrington's farm. Originally built as country estates just south of town, the collection of Queen Anne, Romanesque, Tudor, and Jacobean structures between Poplar and Holman and 4th and 7th Streets proved convenient as the city grew.
People could walk to work or get in their carriages or get down to their places of business.
And there was a lot of business to be done.
We had a lot of major industry. This was a railroad center. Mining was huge. We had manufacturing of steel. It was a large industrial area.
And at the end of the day, the captains of industry retired to Farrington's Grove.
The house was built for the Cox family. He was into auto parts.
Scott Kleinite has opened his home for the annual Farrington's Grove Holiday Home Tour, a formidable example of the free classic style. The house is a constellation of steep gables and Doric columns.
It took 2 years to build, finished in 1900.
From the Grand Central Foyer, an enfilade of rooms leads the eye toward the original dining room.
And it's all cherry wood, cherry doors with a coffered cherry ceiling.
Scott then points out the room's most prominent cherry wood feature.
That is the cabinet that has the pipe organ. When the Coxes had their big social event, their recital for the pipe organ, they had people coming as far away as Pennsylvania.
And when all those guests showed up, they would be well taken care of.
They still have the original buzzers in the floor to call the servants. In front of the chair in the dining room, there's two of them that would have been underneath the dining room table for the owner of the home to buzz back to the kitchen.
There's a whole story there that is so removed from how I live.
Rebecca Clapp described her own Farrington's Grove home.
There was never a utility room in this home because they always had their laundry sent out and they had a cook.
The owner, Eleanor, had a black notebook.
Rebecca's neighbor, Annette Engel, is one of the holiday tour's organizers.
And in it was the dustman, the person you called to clean the gutters, the people. There was a whole list of people who did work for them.
The houses were built with staff in mind.
We have an elevator, and I'm sure the servants that worked in our house rode that elevator. It opens on every floor from attic to basement.
These days, though, there's no staff riding up and down to wait on Kaylin and Dan, who only use the elevator for hauling heavy objects. In fact, the empty nesters can barely begin to use their 6,500-square-foot house.
We more or less don't live in any room downstairs except the kitchen, just myself and my husband.
Like most of their neighbors, the Sanders wouldn't exactly describe themselves as captains of industry.
Instead of captains, I would guess you call them lieutenants.
The homes built for the wealthiest Americans of 1900 have price tags that suit today's average earners.
So you can get 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 square feet for $200,000. A couple of the houses on the home tour, on the East Coast, West Coast, they bring $2 million.
It's a simple case of supply and demand. Terre Haute's moment as the crossroads of America has passed, and the captains of industry have found greener pastures. Their architectural legacy, however, is mostly intact, even though many of the landmarks of Terre Haute's glory days are not. Dan credits the neighborhood's survival to a now-retired professor at Indiana State University.
Now, Harriet McNeil, about 30 years ago, was the impetus in getting this district established.
In the early 1980s, I tried to make a nomination for historic status for this whole neighborhood.
Harriet McNeil is a longtime resident of Farrington's Grove.
So at that time, I was teaching a history of architecture class, which had a strong preservation element in it. So I talked to my class and said, would you all like to work on this nomination? It would be a great honor for you and all that. And the whole class said, yes, they would. There were 1,137 properties that we analyzed. It was an enormous job, and finally in 1983, it came through. I think maybe we might have been the first or second or third in the state of Indiana for a whole historic district.
Being listed on the National Register of Historic Places, however, does not provide penalties if the property is demolished, nor does it provide funds or tax incentives for their preservation. With property values dwindling, the neighborhood's survival has been tenuous.
You know, my home was in desperate disrepair.
Tina Copeland served as a host on the tour.
I bought it because I was afraid the wrecking ball was the next step. Even though I still have original woodwork and I have marble fireplaces, nothing was functioning. I had to take mine down and totally rewire, total new plumbing. Everything has to be redone just to make it habitable.
It's a labor of love, but it's far from unique here. Harriet offered this background about one of the houses on the tour.
Some very good friends of mine restored that 20 years ago, sold it with the understanding that it would be kept in good condition and all that. It wasn't. So 20 years later, they bought the house again and restored it again.
When 6,000 square foot houses tricked out with their original parquet floors, stained glass windows, and marble fireplaces can't seem to fetch more than $200,000, even in pristine condition, they're probably not attracting your average real estate investors hoping to flip. So what brings people to care so much about these old homes?
I wanted to make an investment in a home and in the community.
Elaine McVeigh owns the home that was loved so much it was restored twice.
And I decided I wanted historic because I didn't want to be the only character in the house.
Like many Farrington's Grove homeowners, Elaine has done some research into the characters who preceded her.
The house was built in the early 1900s by a gentleman, his last name was Milk, and he actually made a product called Milk's Emulsion. And I have a bottle in the kitchen, I can show it to you. But it was an elixir, if you will. His manufacturing facility was in the community as well. And he lived here as his family home until the 50s.
To me, it's about preserving history.
Homeowner Tina Copeland.
I want the whole story, and I want the history and everything with the home. It's not just about the home.
It's not perfect, but it's comfortable.
Kaylin Sanders.
People have a mindset about the comforts of home. And they think of these old places that used to be grandma's house. You get Christmas cards from people, and the pictures on those Christmas cards are not of a ranch-style house. They're these old Victorians. So it's kind of it's the atmosphere.
For WFIU, I'm Yael Cassander.
You can see photos taken on this year's Farrington's Grove Holiday Home Tour at wfiu.org/arts.